It is Tuesday the 15th of March and this is episode 80 of Digital Outbox. Hello, I am Chris and I am joined today by Ian.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about all things tech from this week.
God, that was
also
catchy.
Known as iPad 2 come down week.
We'll see. I might have lost my mouse.
You reckon we're going to scrape some news out of there?
I'll scrape loads out of it.
Scrape the news from the iPad 2 bucket. Good. But we are going
I liked to your contribution to last week's show, actually.
My one line.
Yeah. You toss us.
I'm all about the insightful comment.
I just liked it that in the middle of our Hero session last night, Brian says, "Did Chris actually take part in that podcast?"
Yes, I sat there silent all the way through up until that poignant moment.
So I did have to tell him the whole story, and you actually going, "Oh, you pair of tossers."
I think it belonged there, and I'm glad it was in.
Jealousy is a terrible thing. You buying an iPad too?
No.
Why not? It's the best thing ever.
They tell me, and that's part
as
of the reason
they,
I don't read.
As
yeah,
the evil
they.
People.
Yeah, there's a really good viral video out there at the moment of them taking the piss out of that video that they did, and it's very funny. I can't remember what it is, and I can't point you to it, but it was very funny anyway.
Not the Johnny Ives video. Oh, I've seen that one. It's like a minute and a half, and they do the white backgrounds and the top.
Yeah,
and they
do, but it's all about the iPad 2, and it's very funny.
Yes.
And it pretty much tags it saying, doesn't matter what we say, you're going to buy it anyway.
Sycophants.
Okay. Anyway, let's start this week's news with Twitter. And Twitter, banning people from making Twitter apps, basically. I say Twitter apps. It's going to be Twitter clients. I think that's the better way of putting it, isn't it?
Yes. So platform lead Ryan Sarver. I think it's how you... Sarver. Yep. So he starts off a fairly... almost like a puff piece in the developer forums, all about how they've grown and it's great and it's all good. And then just all of a sudden switches tone and starts talking about how that Twitter views a consistent user experience is important to them and they're going to start holding third-party developers to a very high standard to maintain that user experience. And also that they don't want people just purely mimicking what Twitter are doing. So fairly controversial change in stance.
Twitter completely imitated when it wrote its app. It completely imitated several of the people that had made clients ahead of time.
When Twitter first came out, it was purely web based. They were looking at people, using text on their mobile phones or using the web client. Indeed, one of the first, I think it was the first iPhone client, was Twitterific. So from Icon Factory. And if you look at an app like Twitterific now, and you look at something like the official Twitter apps on any of the platforms, very, very similar. So are Twitter really saying they're just going to switch off access to, APIs, switch off access to the stream for these apps?
I'm reading between the lines, and I don't know if you agree with this sort of interpretation, but what I think it is Twitter, knowing that there's lots of people writing Twitter apps that are below par and basically end up affecting the image of Twitter because they're a bit rubbish. I mean, anyone could write an app, or up till now, anyone could have written a client that didn't perform, didn't do things properly, was dubious on user privacy and things like that. So they're now trying to... chuck away those kind of clients. They don't want them. They just want these nice, big, good use ones. So I don't think it's actually attacking people like Twitterific because it's saying you can continue and
I'm not so sure.
Okay, but this is what I think they're doing. I think they're trying to maintain users' data and have stop the smaller developers trying to just write clients because they want to earn a bit of cash.
And I think the quote that says it all for me, again from the article that Sarver had produced, developers have told us they'd like more guidance from us about the best opportunities to build on Twitter. More specifically, developers ask us if they should build client apps that mimic or reproduce the mainstream Twitter consumer client experience. The answer is no.
So they're saying we've got a Twitter app. We don't want you to do that. It does sound like they're going to crush a bit of this innovation, even if they don't mean to.
Yes. So, and they have given examples. So they then said, so if you're a developer and you want to use, you know, the Twitter stream, what can you do? And they've pointed out things like publishing tools, so for helping corporates and helping, you know, marketing firms to publish onto Twitter, curation, real-time data signals, enterprise clients. But I think
it's all boring stuff. It's not really consumer stuff, yeah, is it? It's not.
I do think this is partly Twitter growing up. For years, people have said how they're going to make money, and I think this is a sign that they want to, you know, almost Apple-esque, you know, owning the hardware and owning the software. I think you're seeing a very similar play from Twitter now. It's not just about providing the service; they want to own the clients. You saw the Dick Bar controversy a couple of weeks ago when they updated the Twitter client on iPhone and they added in the trending bar, and it was very, very, you know, it really got in the way. It was really badly implemented. And within a couple of days, they updated the app based on user feedback and says, right, well, it's still there, but it's just not as obvious. But that was all about getting promoted tweets. And I think you are going to see change over time. I think you will see promoted tweets starting to appear in the Twitter timeline. So it's not just a case of, you know, it's hidden away somewhere, or it's if you go and look at what's trending right now, you'll see that. I reckon by year end, you will be seeing, you know, paid for adverts in your tweet stream.
Well, let's put it this way. It costs them a lot of money to run Twitter. There's not a lot of place for money to come in, and there are a lot of investors who have put money in expecting that they will have a return on that, and they have to deliver. Whether Twitter survives that transition between, this what it is now and what it will have to become is going to be up to them to manage, and I guess we'll see. There's a bit of resentment against Twitter every now and again, so we'll. It feels as though there's enough momentum there to keep it going through whatever it turns into.
I think the part that's a shame is that, and it's Craig Hawkenberry, who is the guy behind Icon Factory, he's pointed out that what Twitterific brought was the first use of the word tweet, the first use of the bird icon. It was the first native Mac client. It brought character counts.
Twitter's an entirely user and community driven.
No, thing. Definitely.
When the actual product was a kind of empty sandbox, and people molded that sand into what
hashtags,
we see now.
Hashtags weren't there. Well, you know, and it's
none of this has come from Twitter themselves.
I think that's the problem by turning around and saying, you know, go and develop these other apps. But when it comes to just bog standard clients, and that's, you know, if you think about it, that's the thing you're going to use day in, day out. That's our game.
But I don't think that we're going to see the end of these other things. Let's come back to this in 6 months, but I don't think we're going to see the end of the other clients. I don't think we'll see that many new ones.
We definitely, at some point this year, we need a midterm review. You know, so did the App Store go evil? Did it throw out Amazon Kindle and all that kind of good stuff? And it's things like this as well. It's only in 6 months' time will you see any repercussions of this. It's certainly noticed that there's a change.
We got a story later about publishing on iPad and people looking for deals with Apple. So we'll come on to that in a bit.
And just before we jump on, there was some crazy stats released by Twitter, because Twitter's 5 years old. I think it was yesterday or the day before. It's 5 years old.
How mad is that? That's bonkers.
So some stats, it took 3 years, 2 months and 1 day from the first tweet to get to the billionth tweet. And now in a given week, users send 1 billion tweets. So just you know, growth-wise, it's crazy.
Think of the storage for that. That's unbelievable.
It's the storage, but it's also... it's the storage, but it's also the way it's like we expect search just to work on that, you know, instantly. Yeah. You've got your Twitter client now sitting on the Mac. It just gets tweets as soon as they arrive, you know, so as soon as you publish it, it's there.
I was talking to a client the other day, and apparently it's very clever how it does all that.
Mm.
You know, it's not a database as we know it.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not MySQL. It's all this NoSQL type thing.
Very clever stuff.
And in terms of tweets per second, all-time high was 6,939 tweets. And that was on Japan on New Year's Day at midnight. And if they take, and I guess there's just some real-time stats this week, March 12th, there were still 572,000 new accounts created. And on average, it's 460 new accounts per day over the last month.
And which 12 of them probably get reused.
Well, I was going to say, how much of that is spam accounts? How much of that is a real user?
Spam accounts, developer accounts, all those kind of things. I wonder whether they take all those into account. I'm sure they do.
And as a sign of just what you're talking about and supporting the platform, in January 2008, they had 8 employees. They now have 400.
That's a lot of people doing stuff.
Aye.
So that's, well, onwards, ever onwards with their empire and see what they do with it. We are now going to go on and talk about our ISPs. And they look like they're going to be becoming a little bit more open with how they manage their traffic on their networks. I don't know too much about it. I mean, this is quite a new story. I haven't uncovered this myself.
Yeah, basically, the big, I think there's 5 or 6 there. So BSky, BT, O2, TalkTalk 3, Virgin Media and Vodafone have signed up to some standards. So the broadband stakeholder group are pushing these standards. And what they've said is they will publish information about how they manage traffic on their networks. And because they're going to publish in a similar way, I think they've called it a key fact indicator table, which all sounds very... very corporate.
It's like the little things you have on some foodstuffs now. You've got lots of food.
Yeah, it's the health warning.
They're going to tell you the amount of sugar in there.
But by the end of June, these key fact indicators should be published on all these ISPs' websites, and it should at least give you a way of comparing between all 7 or 8 of these ISPs. But you just wonder if this is the next step before we start getting into the real nitty gritty around net neutrality.
That's still bubbling away underneath somewhere. We haven't touched on it for a few weeks, but it's still bubbling away.
Definitely.
The next we're going to hear of it probably is when it's in the bill and passed.
Yeah, I've got no issue about somebody shaping traffic to make sure that I get web and audio and all that kind of good stuff. You know, if I'm being a naughty boy and pirating, I don't expect. I'm quite happy for somebody to throttle that. I have no issue at all.
But I think we're both in agreement. Shaping's allowed, but you can't shape based on particular provider.
No.
You should do it on content type.
You know, so and it's funny, everybody uses Sky as an example, but if my BBC iPlayer downloads take me 10 hours to download an hour-long programme, and my Sky download takes 30 minutes to get an HD version of an hour, I've got issues with that.
Yeah, so have I.
Especially if it's proven that it's not, you know, the BBC servers aren't up to, you know, scratch and all that good stuff. If they're saying we're pumping it out, but it's getting throttled, which I'm sure if it was happening, they will point out.
Frightening stuff. But it's all good that they're getting more open and putting this sort of shape and stuff
absolutely.
Out there, because it goes on and it's better that we know. My only concern is that for most people, it's going to be information overload. Are they really going to understand it? I mean...
But I'd rather have it than not.
Yeah, yeah. I would. I mean, there's still a lot of bumblings and burblings about how, you know, the average speed of UK broadband is 6 meg. But, you know, are ISPs mis-selling? Lots of people say they are. I reckon it's just consumers being not reading properly, basically.
I've still yet to see, I think you pointed out a few weeks ago, I've still yet to see what do they put if they don't put up to.
Yeah, what's the alternative other than a really long spiel? I mean, every single provider that I've seen recently puts, we will connect you the fastest speed we can for your area based, you know, up to a maximum of 8 meg. And what more can you have? I can't. That's as clear as it can be, I think. So there's a lot of furore about it, but, you know, maybe they just want people to say, well, an average would be 6 megs. Mm. I think that's maybe all they're asking for, but... Seems like that information's already out there anyway. Still, Facebook comment boxes have been upgraded. And
yes.
In fact, yeah, so, and is it Ask Tech? No, TechCrunch are using Facebook comments, and they've had some interesting outcomes from converting to it.
Yeah, so this happened, I think it just happened the day of our last podcast. So I wanted to actually delve in a little bit more before we had a little chat about it. They've had a plugin for quite a while, but they've now made it a lot more user-friendly, and they've also brought in some admin tools around it. You know, so as a moderator, you can control a lot more. But basically...
Yeah, you get to spam people... Well, mark people as spam and, I guess, moderate and remove comments and stuff.
Yes. But I think the one interesting thing is that Facebook users tend to be real people. You know, my Facebook is me. It's not some pseudonym that I'm using or anything like that. And it seems to be that although they have a massive amount of users, you know, you look at they've got 500 million users, and then you compare it to, you know, how many users are on Twitter, but how many are, I mean, I've got multiple Twitter accounts, we can go in as different people, a lot of them are spammers. I don't get that on Facebook. It's actually quite well done. TechCrunch have put the plugin in, and what they saw was that their comments, you know, fell away quite drastically. You know, instead of getting maybe 1,000 comments, they're getting 100, but the actual comment quality tended to be far better. The engagement tended to be far better. And it
so
was
they
less...
said about one in every five of their comments was actually a useful, worthwhile comment, is what they were saying, isn't it?
And whereas previous to that, it was a lot of trolls. You know, and a lot of the people just going first, and then somebody saying, "You're an arse." And then somebody saying, "Why am I an ass? You know, I was first." And it just went on, and it was like that's just the first comments you see under a post. You just switched off instantly.
Well, it's the YouTube effect as well, isn't it? If you read the comments under a video, it's just a whole ton
it's
of horrid. Junk, basically.
It's just horrid.
And it actually, like I say, the internet brings out the best and worst in people.
Oh, I saw some horrible, it was an image of somebody, and it was under, I think, I'm not saying it was from YouTube, it was from a video site, and it was people in America commenting about the earthquake and the tsunami. And it could have been spoof, because I didn't have the link back to it, but it was all about how this was all for Pearl Harbor and stuff like that. And you're just like, good grief. You know, but then, of course,
like I say, best and worst in people.
Yeah, it then spins on to this sums up America. It's like, it doesn't. It sums up some cranks on a website. And you don't know if somebody spoofed this image either. Yeah. There's some nutters out there. But I actually thought this was quite interesting. You know,
two issues for me with Facebook comments. One, you're fully, you know, it's about you, it's your Facebook account. But I just avoid putting data into Facebook wherever I can. And I have no idea what Facebook, you know, would want to do with my comments going forward. I fully know that anything I say in a comment box that's going to go installed in Facebook will never be deletable based on their past performance.
Yeah. And even if you leave, you get the feeling that it's still hanging around in somebody else's stream or post or whatever.
Yeah, and you have no control over that. And we already know that employers and people look at your Facebook stream, and going forward, it probably get looked at more, and you can never take back then something you've said, which is an important part of, you know, being able to retract statements is sometimes important.
Yes, definitely. I think a couple of points from myself. What wasn't clear to me is, can you actually get the comments back? You know, so if I was using WordPress just now and I want to swap to Discus or Discuss, I'm never quite sure what they're trying.
It's going to be Discus. It's not going to be Discus.
I want to say Discus, but every time I see it, I don't know. I can't help it.
It was like that other one we came up with.
Scribd.
See, they should have little, you know how you have in dictionaries, you have the pronunciation. They should have them next to all these stupid names that they
keep
coming
up with.
That
sounds like a plugin. Have a plugin, put it into Google Chrome. You get a little audio box next to it, and you click it, and it tells you how it should be pronounced. Yeah. But there's no clear way of getting your comments out again. You know, so if I wanted to move away from Facebook, I think they're all stuck there. And also, you have to have either a Facebook account or I think it was a Yahoo. Was it Yahoo or AOL? Can't remember. In the actual code, there was also sign-ins for Google and Twitter. And seemingly they were negotiating right up to the launch, but then they couldn't agree on terms to include. Because I think if Google and Twitter signing was there, it would have been a lot stronger.
In their docs, they do say that they are going to add more, you know, soon.
Mm.
But there's no particular timescale on that. I guess it depends on whether they can have the other sign-in methods. Yes, it'll be stronger. I just don't like Facebook having my data, and login for comments.
Do you think Facebook's won the identity war? Do you think that is
the
place?
I think it might have done, yeah. I think I cannot see anyone, unless something serious happens and they have massive competition issues or some other massive leak or something that goes particularly wrong, I cannot see how anyone can beat this. It's because it's very useful to have a single sign-on and a single identity across multiple places. But my problem with it is I just don't trust them.
No,
basically.
And I think I almost feel the same way that Apple kind of seems to have, you know, although they've got competitors and other people taking market share, I think they kind of got the digital music market sewn, whereas I don't think they've got the digital video one at all, but I think they've got digital music. I think Facebook have got that identity market now.
Mm. And that's bigger, I think.
Oh, yeah.
By a considerable amount. I mean, it's why they're rated so highly, you know, they're an investment dream, really.
Scum.
You got in early. Hey. An update for Google, then. I can't remember the name of the plugin. In fact, I've got it here. So what was it called? A personal block list.
Yes.
We talked about that. Was your pick, wasn't it, for a Chrome extension that let you remove domains from search results to get rid of those kind of spammy junk ones and say,
like,
I don't want to listen. I don't want to have them anymore. But Google have actually whacked that into their mainstream now. So when you get search results back, you can remove them so you no longer have results from that domain.
As long as you're logged in.
Which is a nice streamlining feature. And I say, hopefully, ongoing, that will be very useful for them to take into account on their algorithms as what is spam, what's useful.
Definitely.
All good news. They've also added more data into their, or rather, increased the amount of reliance on the data they're using in the navigation. So they've always had the layer for traffic levels that you can have when you're using it on your phone. So you get that data about how much traffic is on the roads. But now they will actually take that into account when routing you. So if you choose to, it will give you the fastest route based on traffic, not just based on distance. Sounds like a good one.
Definitely. I'm just thinking I should really go and check TomTom's share price right now. Because it's things
this thing is awesome. I mean, the software is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, as long as you've got a data connection, I guess that's the only issue for when you're doing the actual search. You just need it for that initial bit. Once you've done that, it's perfect. It's a computer voice, but it's quick, reliable. It does a good job of coping when the satellites aren't reachable or whatever. It's just, you can't beat it. And you've got, if you need it, you've even got Street View.
I think it is so, so good. And I know they have said at some point they will bring it to other devices. If I was them, I wouldn't. I would just keep that as an Android exclusive. I think it's a fantastic feature.
If they can get they're going to get ads and stuff like that into it somehow, I guess. The number of actual locations, as in places of interest, or even just down to individual shops or pubs and things like that, it's got them all. Mm. It's just amazing how easy it is. And you can, you know, through the latest phone, you can also tell it where you want to go, although I have had very limited success with that. Basically, it never understands what I'm talking about.
Well, I've found the later versions a lot better than when the software first came out. You know, so the kind of voice search nonsense is actually surprisingly
your voice, and I haven't persevered with it enough to give it that chance.
It obviously likes Glaswegians, then that's all I can say. The thing I liked about this is the fact that it's actually doing it smartly as well. You know, so it's seeing you slowing down, so it knows that it's a bad route to go, and it's looking at historic traffic levels and saying, actually, I'm going to take this longer route, and we'll get you there quicker.
Yeah, it feels next gen again. You know, another great little
I want to say something else that we're factoring in was fuel prices, just because it's becoming such an issue. Not in the UK, I think that was an American thing. So they're just trying to highlight to people that, by the way, you go this route, might get there quicker, but it's going to cost you, you know, potentially more because it's longer.
Which is, it's getting more. Well, get me on about petrol prices.
I'm sure I said to you before, every time I drive by the BP garage, it goes up a penny a day. It's a joke. I'm up at one. I think it's 1:34 or 1:35 when I drove by tonight.
I've got friends seriously considering, you know, different transport options based on, you know, the costs. You could probably. It's just getting frightening. Anyway,
hit the cobbles. Do something.
So we're going to walk on to what am I talking about? We're going to go on to Adobe, and they've launched something called Wallaby. Which is their kind of fight back, I guess, against
hit the cobbles.
HTML5 only on things like iOS. So basically, Wallaby is a very early release of something which will allow you to convert very simple Flash files into HTML5. Now, There are lots, so many caveats. It's unbelievable on this. Mm. It basically will, if you've got a flash file that's just a bit of text and maybe a quick moving image, I think that's about as much as it can do at this stage. But it might be, it might mean that banner ads can,
That's for you.
Never will that be repeated. My eyes are burnt. Basically, when I was reading down this, initially I read it and thought, oh, that's quite a clever idea. Convert Flash into HTML5. Isn't that clever? But then, say, by the time you get to what it can actually do, it's they're not there yet, for sure.
No.
And I don't think they will ever get there, really.
Well, it's fairly... I mean, if you take something...
I think they'd do better to start developing some nice front-end tools for HTML5 programming.
Yeah, which I'm sure they must be doing in the background. I can't believe they're not doing something around that.
Of course they are. They will be.
As you say, it's caveated to hell, and it's unless it's the most simplest Flash animation, it's not going to convert. But they are talking about how they have ambitions to get more and more complex. I just think how some of the Flash files are so complex.
We've seen them do some pretty incredible stuff in the past, and I mean they're a clever old company.
Don't get me wrong, they definitely are. If you look at some of the programs, they're obviously amazing. I still think back to that. The content aware fill, and just look at that. And it just every time I think about it, I just think, yeah, that's awesome.
It's made you smile again.
Yeah, it's just awesome.
So yeah, I think it will improve it along the way, but I think what's more likely is we're going to see, say, and not called Flash, called something else that will just be HTML5, their program, which helps with that.
Flush.
And I think good on them if they do it.
I think we should call it Flush.
But, I mean, it's obviously a big move. Flush.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right.
It made
publishing.
Chuckle.
This is our publishing story for iPad. Condé Nast.
Yes.
Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah. So Wired in America is coming out monthly, but Wired UK only came out once or twice. Mixed success, much the same technology that they use in the American one, but they've now confirmed that they will be releasing monthly app editions for iPad, starting with its May issue. GQ will be releasing as well, starting in July, and Vogue is going to receive more special editions.
Exciting!
I was thrilled at Vogue.
up until then, I was not sold.
No. They are going to focus on iPad and iPhone only at the moment. Although they are starting to think about these other platforms, which is just like, yeah. I guess that's going to be down to sales. We've seen iPad 2 coming along. It seems to have blown away pretty much the competition at the moment. And I think they're just going to have a wait and see policy on how successful the other tablets are.
But all these at the moment, they're still talking about individual.
Individual
editions rather than subscription. But they are talking to Apple about getting what they're talking about, a deal that will be good for both people. So what they're pretty much saying is 30% is not good for us.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. I mean, I noticed today there was American music magazines launched, and it's a subscription, and it's $1.99, or it's $7.99 for the year. And again, they're going down the apps route. They're going down the subscription route. They think it's pretty good. And then amongst that, you get 60 tracks to listen to each month. So that seemed a novel way of doing a kind of magazine. The one that stood out for me, it was strange, with Condé Nast, they confirmed they're going to launch 21 iPhone apps across 7 of its magazine brands this year, which seemed odd, but there you go.
I just don't think people have quite figured it out yet, have they? And maybe the subscription model also is throwing a few spanners in the works as to what people were going to do, but it's not what... We want that kind of, we want that magazine experience on your iPad to take with you, like you've just taken it off the shelf, but with some added extras. But it's almost maybe they're trying to go overboard with all the multimedia and all the extra bits and bobs, when actually that's not necessarily what people want. They just want to be able to take the magazines around with them.
And if
there's a video, there's a video.
Yeah, sometimes it feels very much like Encarta when CD-ROMs came out. It just feels like videos. tacked in. You know, there's a space shuttle launch, and everyone's going, "Oh, look, multimedia!"
It was good though. It was exciting.
but
were the days.
But how often? You look at something like Wikipedia. I mean, a lot of that survives just in text and just being quite informative.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe they're trying to take it that bit too far and take it back a level, and I think people will be happier with it.
It's a brave new world.
For sure.
It's a brave new world.
Yeah. Okay, brace yourselves for Apple updates. They've been busy boys releasing all the software to sort of upgrade themselves ready for iPad 2, basically.
Yep, iOS 4.3 came out last week. AirPlay everywhere. It's all very good. iTunes came out to support that upgrade as well. There's a new release of Safari that didn't seem to do very much. Xcode 4 was probably, for me, the biggest release. That's some quick...
This is their integrated development environment, isn't it? For all Mac programs and iPad and stuff.
And previously, the way of getting Xcode was sign up to be a developer. So used to, I think it was a few hundred pounds, dollars used to be if you went to be a Mac developer and you got Xcode. And then they kind of changed the iOS. It was the $99 yearly fee, and it's now the same for Mac developers. But what they've done, which is brand new, is they've actually put it up in the App Store for $5 and said, if you're a non-developer and you want to download Xcode and just start developing, crack on.
So what does that? So how does that work? So you can't actually release stuff then, I guess. You're not in the developer program to be able to pump it out.
No, and you're also missing
a lot of
the...
But if you're a student, you could just download it for practice. Sounds like a good concept.
And a few people pointed out...
£5 for an IDE, that's amazing.
£3.
Yeah, well, is it £3 when it gets over here?
Yeah, £2.99. Okay. People were pointing out how, Visual Studio is free. There's certain editions of it that are free, and I'm like, but it's £3, I'm sure.
And the editions that are free are your very basic editions.
I just can't get over somebody that spent... Let's be honest, they've probably spent over £1,000 on their Mac device, quibbling about spending £3 on a bit of software to develop. This seems...
Look, software development costs money. People have to put this stuff together. Mm. People's wages need paying. Yep. However, I have to say... Aren't Apple now the second biggest company on...
ever.
On second, it probably is ever, actually. Based on the amount of money they've got.
Yep, it's only our reliance on oil, going back to your petrol moans earlier on, and mine, that I think it's Exxon that is still out in front.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm.
That's how much money they're making. It's unbelievable.
Oh, it's scary. And yeah,
unbelievable.
The whole announcement Xcode has installed it, and it basically broke iTunes, which was nice.
Right.
So I couldn't actually sync any devices. And okay. It was a horrible uninstall iTunes... Go and find some obscure library file and delete it. Go and find another obscure library file and delete it. Reboot your Mac. Then empty your trash.
This is all very non-Mac, isn't it?
Yeah. Empty your trash, then reboot your Mac. And then put iTunes back on. And I was like, yeah, that worked. Thanks.
So it worked, but God knows why.
Yes. We talked about the amount of money Apple are making. So the sales for iPad 2 looked to be pretty awesome over the weekend.
They're saying 4 to 5 week wait now on the store, aren't they?
Yeah, online 45 week wait. Physical stores mostly sold out. I think some got in some small stock today. I can see an announcement in the next couple of days saying next week's UK launch is put back. The same thing happened last year. Unprecedented demand. And they had an excuse last year. They could say we didn't know if anybody was going to buy this thing. That's what they said last year. Oh shucks, we didn't know how popular this was going to be. And everybody was like, oh, Apple, wow, another hit. Surely they can't trump out the same thing again. They've had massive sales over the last...
They will.
Probably.
Remember, it doesn't matter what they say, we'll still buy it.
I forgot I am a Mac robot.
Of course it's going to be popular. People just lap it up, don't they?
What I was very impressed at was Anantech had done some... iPad 2 benchmarks, and this was comparing iPad 1, iPad 2, and Zoom, and we're just purely looking at the GPU performance, which looks to be immense.
Yeah, what I've been reading is that graphics processing on the iPad 2 is awesome.
Mm.
There are certain elements and parts of it that are no different. So the dual core hasn't helped things like their JavaScript performance, I think. It might, but I could be speaking out of turn.
Yeah.
There's certain elements that aren't quicker.
The JavaScript has improved. They're using a new engine. So if you download 4.3 on your older devices, I think it's almost double as quick for doing the JavaScript stuff. And there is a step change again. So I think instead of maybe taking, I can't remember Spider?
Yeah, something, I can't remember what it's called.
Spider. Another word comes right into my head when I say spider.
Google search JavaScript spider and it'll come up.
I'll do that.
So the reports are that in some areas it's pretty much the same as the iPad was. In other areas it has sped up considerably. But, say, removing all the load of the graphics from...
Well, there you go. It's just called Sun Spider test.
Sun Spider, there we go.
If only I'd Googled first.
So basically, I can't. Sun Spider's put me off now. What was I saying?
So just to follow up on the ongoing saga of will I buy one or not? Because I know everybody's in tinnitus.
I'm still saying it's inevitable.
So I was quite adamant no. Then I read some reviews and I was like, I'm going to buy one. And now I've switched back to no.
I think if you've got the original, I can't see this iteration why. And in fact, it's very tempting this iteration to buy the original because it's going pretty damn cheap
for I'll show you mine.
Bit of kit.
No, if you're really keen, I'm quite happy to sell it.
Things I want to spend money on. I love the idea of the device. I think it's a clever device. Seeing as I use my MacBook Pro for just web browsing, I'd probably be better off with it at the moment. But I still like having my laptop.
Yes.
And I'm happy with it.
And even though I get excited about smart covers, I'm waiting for the you tossers quote, but it never happened. even though I get excited about smart covers and it is faster, and you know, I still think would I go and spend, you know, £600-800? Because by the time you buy smart covers and HDMI cables and all that good stuff, or do I just go and buy a MacBook Air and be done with it?
Which was also on your list, wasn't it?
Oh, the list
still is tickling away.
The list is ever expanding.
Yeah, of course, as it should be, as a good geek gadget lover.
To finish this Apple section, one more thing: John Bon Jovi. Not only is the guy a dick, but he spouted off some nonsense yesterday. And kids today have missed the whole experience of putting the headphones on, turning it up to 10, holding the jacket, closing their eyes, and getting lost in an album. And the beauty of taking your allowance money and making a decision based on the jacket, not knowing what the record sounded like, and looking at a couple of still pictures and imagining it. God, it was a magical, magical time. I hate to sound like an old man now. You are. But I am. Oh, he admits it. Well done. And you mark my words, in a generation from now, people are going to say, what happened? Steve Jobs is personally responsible for killing the music business. And you're reading this and thinking, hold on.
But hang on, iPods?
Hold on. So... And there's been a whole other reaction to this. And I'm reading this and thinking, no, this is just because you're not making the money you used to make. Or you're having to actually make a full album of decent music and not just one, you know, good single and hope that somebody buys the album based on that
you
one good
that
single.
Get it off your chest, come on.
Yeah, I bought that album in 1983 and I'm still smarting from it. I got 10 shillings for pocket money. I saved up for weeks to buy that album.
I guess there is an element of, you know these really cheap tinny speakers. They are a bit rubbish for playing music, or people playing it just through their phone speaker or whatever.
It's just the fact he's made so much money from music and he's obviously hacked off. He's still not making it. You're an old fart. Give it up.
He's made enough to have made it.
What a cock. Honestly.
Still, he's a cock with a lot of money. So,
surely that's Charlie Sheen. winning.
I'm not sure. He's just a bit unstable. Right. So, app updates.
Oh,
stuff.
Very, very quick. And I'm actually thinking I should do a post for all the new iPad 2 owners that are coming up over the next week and a half, 2 weeks of my, you know, what is my top 10? What should you go and download and pay for on iPad? Flipboard, great app. Now a lot better, so quicker, has Instagram support, So Instagram's a popular iOS app for taking photos and sharing it with lots of nice filter effects. That's all now in Flipboard as well, but it's just a great way of finding new content and reading through Google Reader or reading Flickr or seeing Flickr photos or subscribing to Twitter lists. It's just a great way of browsing content. Love it. And Instapaper, which I'm sure I've harped on about before. Again, it's another one of these apps where you're reading a long article or you're wanting to bookmark an article for later on, throw it into your Instapaper account. I fire up the iPad and I can sit and read it without the intrusion of comments, adverts, blinking stuff all over the place, different colours. Just a lovely, almost Kindle-esque, let's just read that article. Some great improvements over the last week. It's now a lot faster. It's more social. So previously you could subscribe to somebody's shares or likes if you knew their Instapaper account name. But there was no way of that. That wasn't promoted anywhere. But now what you can do is just say, check my Twitter, friends, and show me people who are sharing Instapaper content.
At one point, they did say that they didn't really want to go down the social route.
No, but I think...
They seem to have gone back on that. But
I think they've kind of maybe realised the benefits from that. It's very... It works very... It's not in your face. It's not like skimming out social.
I'd say as long as it doesn't affect the core functionality of it, then
it's not.
That's fine.
He's got bad feedback because he's put three kind of biggish buttons at the top. And people have said, you know, one star, get rid of it or make it an option. And he is going to make it an option. And it's a fairly big upgrade, you know, a lot of back-end code. It is a lot quicker at syncing now. Sometimes the sync used to take quite a while. Now a lot quicker. And you can also now, if you do find something you like, it's dead easy to say, actually send it out to Twitter, Facebook, put it on Pinboard. It's oh, lovely app. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
I can hear in your voice you're in love.
No, I was going to sing. I had to stop myself there.
Bit of Microsoft news then. They've been chuntering away.
Can I up to the loo then?
No, I had to sit through Apple. You can sit through Microsoft. Basically, it's really not that interesting, is it?
Exactly! Anyway,
they have officially now today released IE9. So it's out of beta and into the mainstream. And so they're obviously pushing everyone to use it.
Well done. Welcome to 2008.
So initial reports are that, yes, it's a good browser. I think people pretty much knew what it was going to be because obviously they go through their long-winded release candidate process. But Ars Technica calling it the... I should say Ars Technica rather than Ars Technica. say it's the most modern browser there is. I don't know whether they're just being ironic because it's the latest released one.
That's what I wasn't sure. Is that because it's released today? Does that mean Chrome updates tomorrow? It's Chrome, the most modern browser there is.
But they did seem to suggest, looking at their speed and you know features lists, that actually, yes, it probably is right up there as you know, as good as any. Its biggest drawback being the fact that you can't use it on anything before Vista because of its reliance on a couple of libraries that aren't available for XP. I haven't actually used it. I don't know if you've ever used it. The problem I've got, and I don't know whether it's going to be an issue, obviously I have to support a lot of browsers, and I'm not sure if I install IE9 whether I can still check for backwards compatibility with 8 and 7, which I do need to do. So I will have to look into that. But
so how do you do that?
Keen to try it.
How do you do that currently? Because I know there used to be options to say render this page as an older version.
So they're,
or do you?
So currently, I only have to support 8 and 7, and there are options within 8 to view as 7, and then I have virtual machines to go back to 6.
Yeah,
I'd rather not have to have extra virtual machines just to use IE 7.
Well, I did wonder if you would just take the kind of default of I'll just stand up a virtual machine so I know it's there, rather than letting it render in case the rendering's not quite right.
Most of the time, I found it's actually. I think it actually gets shipped with the two engines in it, so I think it's all good. But for 6, you have to go back onto a virtual machine and stuff.
Well, you can visit my work. We're still using 6. Great.
Like I can't. You've told me I can't even comment on that anymore.
No, the only good thing is it's rolling out this year because we're still on XP.
Can't they just skip straight to 9?
But what did you just say? It doesn't work on XP, and I've just told you we're still on XP.
Can't you skip to 7?
Ah, there we go. we are.
You'll be skipping to 7 when they're onto about
Windows
14.
No, we've kind of got a rollout plan in place.
Ah, I'll have to not call you slackers anymore. Hello. Right, also, Kinect.
Sorry, colleagues.
Yeah, hello. It wasn't Ian that said that, it was me. Right, Kinect is officially a record breaker, Guinness certified. They are the fastest selling consumer electronics device in 60 days, whatever the heck that means. I think it just means they've sold shed loads of Kinects, basically.
Yep.
Which no one saw. Well, you were all a bit skeptical. And I say, I think they're living off the back that they haven't actually released a console. I think a lot of what was sold was redundant console purchases.
But it is actually driving console sales as well. So this February,
they're selling consoles, they're selling games, they're making a mint out of it. Great, good move.
This February, I think, was their biggest February ever. You know, because usually February's a bit of a dead month. You know, there's the, you know, post Christmas, there's no games out, etc. But it was seemingly like a massive month.
It was the perfect release at the perfect time, and this clearly shows that. I mean, I don't know whether, you know, maybe iPad was the fastest selling consumer device in 30 days. You don't know what all these statements mean, but
yeah,
all we can take from it is that they sold a heck of a lot, which they did, and it was a bigger success than even I think they thought.
Well, I just hope we don't see, like, you know, iPad was the fastest selling consumer device in like 30.3 days. And some, exactly. Who knows?
What the hell?
I wonder if Zune Player sold that much.
I don't think it did, actually, funnily enough. And I still think that this was a great bit of hardware. It was too late, wasn't it? It was a great bit of hardware. I don't think anyone ever denied it. Everyone who used it said the sound quality, the hardware quality.
So three people bought it, and they said it was
three
great.
Three people bought it. And all the reviewers said it was good as well. But yeah, never came over here. We were saying we wanted to see it as a... Well, I was saying I wanted to see it as a phone. They kind of did that with Windows Phone 7, but it never quite... You know, it wasn't quite the same.
Well, joking aside, I think the music subscription service that it sold with the hardware was actually very good. It's things like, you know, you've got your lineup of Zunes and they've got this brown one. And it's like, what made you think that somebody's going to look at a brown Zune and want that in their life? Unless they work for UPS or something like that. You know, it's just, what were they thinking?
They're contractually obliged.
An interesting parallel. It's gone. No, Apple, if you look at iPod Touch, nothing very similar to that. And it's just kind of dominating that market. Phones, obviously, massive competition, but iPod Touch and iPods, they kind of own. And I do wonder if they're doing the same with iPads. Are they going to be the tablet go-to no matter what comes out?
Now,
because, as you've said, the Zune hardware was very good, and it just got ignored.
I think we will see an Android tab that can take it on. Whether they've got a head start that can't be taken over, I don't know.
And that's what I'm trying to say. I think...
We thought that about the phone a few years ago.
Oh, I don't know. I always thought Android would come along. But
Android didn't exist a couple of years ago, and we were looking at the iPhone thinking, how is anyone going to attack that? We didn't know about it.
Yeah, but you expected your Nokias and you expected your Microsoft to step up, and they never really
did.
But
they haven't really.
No, but they never...
Someone came and Google came along and filled that gap. I mean, all we had at the time was an announcement that a lot of people had signed up to this, whatever Android was. And it's come a long, long way since then.
Maybe.
Anyway, so Zune is no more. They've officially going to discontinue the sales of the hardware, although the software and the services that support that hardware that exists out there, the three people, will still be able to use it, basically.
I wonder how long for, because they do have a history of closing services down as well.
Well, they make that very clear when they do, but it's generally a long time, hence the reason we're still seeing IE6 out and it's only just finished support.
Like the Kin. Buy a Kin, 3 months later, you can't use it anymore.
Yeah. No one liked it, so we're going to stop that. Anyway, that's the end of the news, but let's have a look at what's coming up next week. We have got, drumroll please, supposedly, the iPad 2 UK launch. Whether that will happen, you're sceptical? I think it might.
I hope it does, because Shaki was going to queue up for one.
Is he?
Yeah.
Not at the Apple store again.
I have to point out as well that, see, about sort of 2-3 months ago, he kind of looked at me and says, I hardly use this. Sometimes I wonder why I buy this. You know, and then
it's got a blooming logo that's right on it.
Yeah, and then 2 weeks ago, smart covers. Oh,
I can't believe I'm going to buy a bit of kit based on a cover.
He sold his already.
Has he?
Ah, the old one's gone. There's a guy in Leeds that's got it, Dirty Leeds. Somebody's bought it.
I think, for me, the biggest problem with all these, the new Apple release, I know I wasn't on for the iPad 2 thing, is the fact that because they've got everything so sorted and tied down, and updates don't feel that exciting. Mm. I don't know, I mean, they clearly do for a lot of people, but for me, if I had an iPad 1 and then I upgraded to an iPad 2, I really wouldn't feel any difference. Okay, I might feel a bit speed, but there's the actual user experience is not that different.
I think
that's because they've got it sorted.
What's interesting for me is the phone I feel like is almost like a yearly upgrade it's turned into. And a lot of people that I know were kind of a niche group do see it that way as well. You know, they want the fastest and best. I never think that about a laptop. I never think that about my desktop. My desktop's 4.5 years old. And I'm desperate to upgrade it. That's why I'm considering the iPad has to wait. And I think the iPad, it's just maybe too pricey to be classed as every year I'm going to upgrade that.
I'm sure I'd find it a bit empty.
I will caveat it I wouldn't be surprised if I was standing in a queue next Friday.
Just don't stand in the Apple one. Go stand in someone else's queue.
Be shorter. You've got a cheat to talk.
We also next week have the Nintendo 3DS launch on the same day, as it happens.
Yeah, I might buy both.
And from the reviews, everyone who's touched one and used one say it's very clever tech. But also most people that have reviewed them have said I'm a bit too old for this.
Yeah, the Sony PSP is a great piece of tech.
Exactly, they are great pieces of tech. I just think they're a bit early 2000s.
Mm. No, definitely.
I think we're beyond them.
I think phones and now tablets are turning into the game platforms of choice for mobile anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's next week anyway. So let's get on to our picks. And I will start with mine this week, I think. Now I'm going to choose a pick which, if you looked at our blog, you would have seen a video go up. And yes, it was a Flash video. Sorry about that. But it was a video of my Android phone in operation. And I did that, or I took the video, using a great little program called Droid at Screen, written by someone who wanted to be able to display their phone on a projector. And it's a great little bit of kit. You just literally download the app and plug in your Android phone, and then it shows it. And I used then Camtasia to record what was going on. It's kind of one of the reasons why I really like the Android is the fact that I can do this, and there are options out there for me to piddle around, for want of a better phrase, and play. So anyway, Droid at Screen, if you're interested in being able to record your own phone in operation. It's a little bit jerky, a little bit slow at the moment. But if it's, you know, give it a go. Ian, what's your pick?
My pick is, I guess it's similar to a bit of software I can't remember. That's a good start. Flipboard. Similar to Flipboard. It's another kind of take your feeds, take your tweets, take that kind of information and turn it into a magazine style app. This one's called Zite, Z-I-T-E. It's free. And what you do when you sign up, you plug in your Twitter details, you plug in your Google Reader details, and then it brings back content it thinks will be interesting to you. And initially it's based on what your followers are tweeting out themselves and also what's in your Google Reader. And it does it by categories, and you can also pick other categories as well. So it did actually very well. I got a Mac one, photography. There was one in podcasting. Radiohead popped up as a category, and it was like, that's actually quite smart. It pulled all that from my feeds and tweets. The interesting thing about this is, and speed wise, it's not as quick as Flipboard, but it's a nice clean interface. But as I like, and if you think back to the like dislike, and it's a bit like TiVo, you know, your little thumbs up, thumbs down. So if you read an article and you don't like it, thumbs down, and it then intelligently will say, well, he didn't really like that, we won't serve him that kind of content again. You know, so if I get an article on Zoom, I'll be like, oh, I don't want to read that again, ever again. Hide it away, and I won't see that. Initially, it seems to be working very well. You know, so
is it a Flipbit replacement for you, or is it, you're still a bit undecided yet?
Well, it's actually, even although it's pulling stuff from my feeds and tweets, it's actually pulling in different content as well.
So it's not just your feeds, it's enhancing in that's quite a nice little thing.
Seems to be, and I guess I've only been using it a week and a half. So whether me thumbing up or thumbing down the content is actually working aggressively, it's hard to tell yet. But it was just quite nice that I actually identified Radiohead as an actual content group, and all its content was, I had nothing anywhere because I didn't have any of that in my Google Reader. I guess it was pulling it out from the tweets about the new Radiohead album.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's really nice. I really liked that. So that's good stuff. That's Zite free iPad.
Zite.
Yes.
And that is the end of our podcast. Thanks for listening. If you want to find out more, you can at www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us info@digitaloutbox.com. Twitter and Skype, we're on as Digital Outbox. Please submit a review on iTunes, preferably a good one. If you can, we would be most grateful. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. Where can we find you, Ian?
Iand.net. And my Twitter account is Sweeper.
Okay, that's it. We will speak to you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Goodbye. You know, I thought that was brief, but I don't think it was.
55 minutes.
It wasn't brief.
I'm going to click stop already.
Oh.
I haven't clicked stop. Do you want me to not click stop?
No, it's fine.
I'm hungry. I want my tea.
I can tell. You look ravenous.
Yes, I don't look like I'm carrying stores with me, do I?
I don't know, your cheeks are fairly puffed out. Let's stop there.